with anyone. But when I see you hanging about with anyone, it's not unusual to see me cry. I wanna die. It's not unusual to go out at any time. But when I see you out and about, it's such a crime.
In the chat room, Genshu17 just said, everyone start the Carlton Banks dance. Anyone? Old people in the house?
Wow.
Yeah.
I like it.
All right, welcome to the Gleeful Podcast with Josh and Ed. I'm Josh.
I'm Jen.
I'm Ed.
And welcome back. We apologize for missing last week, but all of our lives are wacky. Jennifer was in Chicago last week.
Yep.
I started a new job last week. Hence the new time change. We will now be recording at 7 p.m. PST. That'll be our standard time.
Much better. You were like too early in the morning for me with it. 8:30 business.
Wow. Well, so this will be our standard time for people that want to join us, that can join us live. And yes, and we are back, and we have a new episode of Glee. Da 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 da.
Yay!
Yes, we have the season 3 premiere to talk about. We have a ton of voicemails, a ton of emails, and a whole bunch of new songs. We had 5 songs in this episode, and so we will listen to those. And the Purple Piano Project, before we get too far into Glee, Jennifer, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Ed, how are things in Indiana?
Okay. Stressed about finding a real job, but you know, that'll solve itself when it solves itself.
And I had a totally random thing which I won't take too long to discuss. I posted some pictures on Twitter, but on our last show we talked a little bit about American Horror Story, the new show from Ryan Murphy and Brad Falchuk, who created Glee, their new show on FX, which premieres on October 5th, I believe is the date. American Horror Story. At some point I got an email about their website, which is youregoingtodieinthere.com. And I immediately went to it because I thought, well, that sounds awesome. And it's really cool. Like, you can walk through the house because the show is set in this kind of creepy house in LA. And I clicked on the, I don't know what I did, but whatever I did, I got a package in the mail yesterday. A giant box in the mail, and inside it was a little piece of wallpaper with some words on it and a copy of 120 Days of Sodom by the Marquis de Sade. And it was like covered in ink and lines were crossed out and pages were torn and pictures were pasted into it. It was crazy.
Yeah.
So I'm crazy excited for American Horror Story.
It is kind of funny because we both were looking at this box and we're like, this is not a mass-produced thing. This is a book that has been, by hand, you know, lines scribbled out, but certain words are highlighted so that if you look at scan across a page, you know, 4 words together will give you a clue to something. And it's just,
yeah,
it's pretty crazy. Like, I mean, even if they only did like 50 of these, that would still be a lot.
It's seriously, I would estimate a solid 4 hours of work went into that. I mean, if not more. It was every single page of that book is drawn and written on or torn or has some been in some way manipulated. It's crazy. So I don't know why, but American Horror Story realized, like, this is our freaking target audience is Josh Brunel,
yeah,
who loves horror movies, and Connie Britton. So it's going to be...
Really?
So I'm definitely looking forward to that show. And I'd be curious to see what people... And you can see those pictures on my Twitter feed. But we had the return of season 3, or the premiere of season 3 this week, entitled The Purple Piano Project. A couple big surprises in the episode, not to mention one fiery girl from the Glee Project, which was pretty wild.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised she was the first one to make a cameo.
Yeah, and some other things. But let's go ahead and start off, as we always do with a new episode. Jennifer... How did we feel? What was your temperature on the Purple Piano Project?
I thought it was a good episode. I thought they definitely addressed a lot of the things that, you know, we'd been discussing over the summer, and they're kind of picking right up with things. It didn't feel particularly special or enthusiastic or anything. I guess I'd give it a B. I wasn't blown away by it. I mean, there were definitely some funny things, and there were definitely some interesting things, but I think because we've been talking about it so much during the summer, and because so many things we kind of knew were already going to happen because of, you know, going to Comic-Con, I was sort of like, spoilers, oh, okay. Yeah, there was just nothing blew me away.
Ed, what was your temperature on the Purple Piano Project?
Going into the episode, I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'll watch it. I really wasn't very enthusiastic about it, to be 100% honest. But then I got it. But then, of course, I watched it. And it reminded me a lot of the OC season 2 premiere, where at the end of OC season 1, all the characters had spread across. Like, they all, like, went their separate ways. And at the beginning of season 2, they all had to come together. And that reminds me of this, where it's like everything coming back together. It may have not been... I felt a lot of things were forced, especially Brittany lines. Is like, ooh, I mean, there was at least one time that I was like, ooh, like, that seems a little forced. But overall, I think it was a great return to form. It's pretty much everything I liked about Glee. It surprised me with some of the song selections, like songs I like, because I always see the song list beforehand. Songs that I wasn't excited about when it actually happened. It's like, oh wow. So everything about it was good. And I would say B plus. In the overall scheme of things, B plus.
You definitely, you bring up a couple of good points. Like, the song selection was kind of unique, and we'll talk about that a little later. But yeah, I think I'm more on Jen's side. I thought it was like a solid episode. It was, I mean, it was certainly better than like half of season 2.
But you have to give it so much credit, because all these, like, they could have so easily. Glee could have so easily just dwelled on the same storylines that they were stuck in, and they legitimately moved them along. And just for that, they deserve that little plus.
And you're absolutely right about that. Sorry. You're absolutely right about that, because, you know, in a way, I felt if I had any complaint about this episode, it's that, like, I wrote down, before we do the podcast, I write down all the major plot lines from this episode. And as I was writing them down, I was realizing there were like 10 major plot lines from this episode, but none of them were real plot lines. They were all just kind of setting up things to come. Like, nothing really happened with Will and Emma this episode as much as it set up things to come.
But so much happened.
But was this episode a complete story? Like, did it have a beginning, middle, and an end? No, I think it was a lot of beginnings.
No, but it pretty much took us back. Like, it took us from where we were at the end of season 2. And it, like, here's where we are at season 3. Like, maybe nothing particularly happened on this episode, but in terms of moving things along, I think it did a fantastic job. Like, it didn't dwell on anything. Everything seemed fairly logical. I like how they addressed the junior-senior thing fast. I'm sad about Fourth Street. I'm sad about Lauren Zeiss's. But so is life, I guess. So is life.
Jennifer?
Yeah, I mean... I do not disagree. I mean, I think I even said that. They definitely answered a lot of questions. They tied up a lot of things. They hit all the right story points. It was like they went through the checklist of the, okay, good, okay, good, okay, good. It didn't do anything to just totally get me enthusiastic about the season. Like, when you think about last year's, you know, opening episode, and, you know, like the whole New York, what's that? Yeah, they did that in New York.
Everybody State of Mind, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and,
totally.
And I mean, there was just like, there was so much promise and enthusiasm and excitement. And I just was so excited after the first episode last year. But this one, I'm like, okay, this is cool. It agreed. A solid episode. That's why I say a B. And I, you know, again, I think they went through their checklist, and they got everything out of the way. And it's like, some things I'm sure they'll explain a little bit, like how Will and Emma got from, you know, him taking off for New York and them, you know, shacking up together.
Probably so. Not.
But they might. Not, so
story consistency isn't their strong suit. I'm fine with this explanation and just moving on.
Right. But I mean, yeah. So I just didn't feel like it was anything that special.
Yeah, I mean,
good, just not special.
There, the things that did annoy me about the episodes, kind of to what you're saying, Jennifer, the things that did annoy me about the episode were the little cast-off drop-in moments, like introducing Mercedes' boyfriend, I thought really had no place in this episode. I mean, all they had to say was, Sam moved away, and I'm not with him anymore, but there's a new man in my life, and then go. Like, we didn't have to see him. As soon as he showed up on screen, like, that was one of the most awkwardly poorly written moments of television, where she kind of walks up and he had some line like, yeah, you're going to win an award and then we're going to make cocoa babies. And she's like, I love the way you talk. And they walk off. Like, I acted it better than they did in the episode. And it just kind of fell flat. It was like, save that for later when we can really get an introduction to this character. We can really
Because that's all he is. That is his highlight of the show, of the season.
But
then what's the point of having him? Like, he's got to have some depth.
So that people can't be complaining that Mercedes is lonely. Because we are run by trolls, people.
And then as I've said before, my favorite character, Finn. Finn had his, you know, what am I doing with my life? It seems like everybody has plans, but I don't have any for myself. It was like, and it even came really early in the episode. So I'm thinking, oh, this episode's going to be about Finn. And how he's,
Josh, is that, I don't know, I came in with such low standards, and apparently you did not.
Well,
so
I think I came in with the same standards I have on every episode, but...
Well, you can't... You
so
can't
they are it. High.
Season 2 was good. Season 1 had great moments. Season 2 had some nice moments. That's the difference. Like, Season 2 had some nice moments. So I was coming into this being like, well, based on the trend, like, this is gonna... Like, hopefully we'll get some okay moments this year. So the fact is, it exceeded my expectations, and that's why I enjoyed it more than you guys did. I mean, not to say you didn't enjoy it, but like I was much more impressed with it than you seem to be.
Well, let's talk about some things that worked. I mean, you know, I know you tweeted this, Ed, but Lindsay's number at the Nyada meeting was unreal. That was fantastic.
She should have won, whatever. But
yeah, I mean, she really... I wasn't thrilled with her acting in that
really?
Scene, but I thought
was,
her performing
I, it,
was
dynamite. Didn't find it distracting.
I didn't find... Well, I found it distracting because I was just sitting there being like, is she acting or is this
you
more
know what
of
I found
the
most
project?
Annoying about it was that I felt like she was the most off on the dance steps. But that was the only thing that was annoying about it. With that exception, and that isn't even the big deal. Like, it's like, whatever. It's like, okay, you're off on the dance steps, whatever. Move on.
Jennifer, any what worked for you in this episode?
Well, I really liked that whole scene and the whole realization that, you know, like, we're special in a small place and there's so many people out there like us. I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh,
what else worked for me?
Well, and to what you said, Rachel and Kurt's scene in the car.
Yeah.
That was some of the best writing and acting we've seen on Glee since season 1.
Yeah, and I like
that
them
was
as
so
a team.
Genuine.
I like them working together as opposed to against each other.
Yeah.
I think they're such, you know, they're so alike that, you know, it was obvious that they would end up like this. So I liked that.
Well, you know, the show's first big number was We Got the Beat. So let's go ahead and take a listen to that now. This is We Got the Beat, performed by the New Directions on Gleeful Podcast. Listener Jacob emailed me, title of the email was Best Line from Episode 1, and it was, I prefer the Bangles.
That was pretty funny.
A great joke. There were some good lines in this one. Brittany's, are you working on a time machine too?
Yes.
But that was good.
That was good.
There were a couple good ones. There were a couple, you know, not so hot ones as well. When Sugar said, "I work that song like a hooker bowl." That was a little...
I like that. I like Sugar. Whatever.
Well, before we get too deep, let's go ahead and listen to a couple messages. We got a ton of messages, so we'll get to as many as we can. But this is listener Abby.
Hi, it's listener Abby from Texas. I've talked to y'all before, but I just got finished watching the third season, first episode, for the probably 30th time. Watched it all last night. I'm actually a little mad. Okay, I did not like it that much at all.
Let's go ahead and dissect that for a second. She said, I watched the episode 30 times, and I didn't like it at all. It's like, this is a gleek, man. This is somebody who loves this show. So I thought, well, right there, I got to play your message.
It puts my 3 times to shame.
Here you go. Let's see what Abby had to say.
Quinn had 10 lines. Finn, I went back and counted, had 12. Puck had maybe 4. And Rachel and Kurt did not need to be the theme of an episode. It was basically Rachel and Kurt, and it's not that I don't love them. It's just, I wanted to see freaking Quinn. I love Quinn. And now she's going all weirdo and freaking out on us. And I still think that the skanks, or whatever they were called, were fun-y. They were awesome. And it's just like, oh my god. But I didn't like it very much at all. I seriously, Blaine came, and then it's just like, you see the conversation with Blaine and Kurt. Oh, Kurt's trying to reason. And it just, like, and then he shows up. Just kind of felt like the writers were like, okay, we need to get him here, but we don't want to waste time on it. So we're just going to give you about 10 minutes in a musical number to say that he's coming. And I didn't like it. Anyway, thanks. Look forward to hearing your podcast. Bye.
Well, Abby hit on a bunch of stuff, but she settled on, or she ended with Blaine. Blaine did come to New Directions this week, and he did perform It's Not Unusual, which I performed on my first date with Jennifer at karaoke.
Yes, you did.
But, and much better, I must say. But anyway, what...
I married you. Isn't that enough?
What did we think about Blaine coming to the New Directions, Ed?
It's kind of like obvious. I mean, not to be like, it's okay, it is obvious. Like, the fans love him. Like, if the fans didn't love him, he wouldn't be around still. So it's purely based on sales and that they need 12 people and they cut other people to make room for him.
It's definitely convenient. They no longer have to cut away to the warblers. But, I mean, are we losing something in having him there? I mean, no typo. I did not do the Carlton when I performed that at karaoke.
We already have the Warblers album. I mean, if they did that forever, that wouldn't be good. And if you looked at sing-offs ratings, I don't know if that's the way to go.
Well, my question, though, is like, are we going to lose something actually having Blaine around all the time? Because in a way, I guess I'm asking it because that's, I guess that's kind of how
no,
I
it
feel.
Isn't. No, we're not losing something because we discussed this last week that what we want from Kurt and Blaine is just for them to be happy and in the background.
Yeah.
Their story like didn't bother me. It wasn't in my face. It just happened. I was happy and we moved on. And now we could just be like that for the rest of the season. So no, it's perfect. It's what we asked for.
That's
we can't
true.
Complain when we get what we asked for.
I mean, and I agree too, and I think it will allow us to see more New Directions as opposed to, like, you know, 3 songs from the Warblers and, you know, 3 songs from New Directions.
Yeah.
They'll be performing all together, and that will make them, you know, we don't have to lose as much or split the time between them. And I think that Blaine's going to be an interesting challenge for Finn.
Yeah,
so I think Finn's at risk of being usurped by.
That was so odd, though, when Finn like blamed Blaine for setting the purple piano on fire, when we all saw the Cheerios pour the
lighter fluid,
and then Quinn throw the match. So the only one who was not involved was Blaine. Like, yeah. That seems so strange that they made such a point in the musical number to, you know, create this scene, and then Finn somehow totally missed that and went off on a tangent.
Well, it could be also because he's possibly threatened by his talent and presence.
Back to that number, a lot of people said, are we going to see a Santana and Blaine moment? Like, is Santana going to crush on Blaine because she danced with him in that musical number? Jennifer, did you get that feeling at all?
Oh, there was definitely something there. But I think, I mean, we've already kind of addressed that when Blaine and Rachel kissed. He's like, nope, I'm gay.
We're gay. Right?
So I don't think, if that hadn't happened, you know, maybe there would be that question. Well, you know, Blaine's never been in, a heterosexual relationship. Maybe he's straight. Maybe he's bi, whatever. But because we've already kind of eliminated that possibility, I just don't think it's going to happen.
And would you start with Santana? Like, if you were going to take your first foray into women, would you start with Santana? She's a bit of a pain in the ass.
She's experienced.
I was going to say, I mean, it seems like the quickest way to figuring it out is with the quickest person. And
with
so it was either her or Brittany.
Who's a pro. Well, you know, we had Kurt and Blaine, and then we also had Rachel and Kurt. We had a lot about Rachel and Kurt in this episode. And they're wanting to go to Juilliard and then finding out that there's no musical theater department at Juilliard, which actually took me by surprise as well. I just kind of assumed there was. Yeah. But so now they're trying to get into the Ñada. And it seems like this is going to be like a season arc. You know, this is going to be what we're doing with Rachel and Kurt. How do you feel about that, Ed? Like, do you think it kind of works for them?
Oh, yeah, it totally works. Well, my favorite part of the Kurt and Rachel in the car with the rain. Apparently, whenever people cry in the car, it has to be raining.
I know. And it was the fakest rain ever.
It wasn't that strong. It wasn't like all by myself rain with Emma, where it's like, oh my God, someone is like, be concerned about flooding. God. My favorite part about that was the fact that as I was hoping for this season, that this season would be about rejection.
Mm.
So I'm just waiting for the call, Ryan Murphy. But beyond that, I think it's an interesting storyline because it takes Rachel and Kurt, like, because I don't want to deal with Kurt Blaine anymore. Like, that's over. They're happy. It's over. And this is a storyline that's interesting and could potentially go to a spinoff sector, but that's fine if it doesn't. But just the feeling of the possibility of it maybe happening is enough to tantalize me.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. What I also like about it, kind of like what you said, what I also like about it is it kind of takes them away. Like, so, you know, they're still a part of New Directions, but it gives them something private to be working on and kind of off on the side. So it isn't like, you know, they don't have to constantly be bringing their drama into the family. They can kind of take care of their drama on the side with this, you know, with other people. And it did give us that crazy Lindsay moment that, like, which it's like you said, it's so wild that she's the not the winner of the Glee project,
not
but she's
even
the
second
first
runner
on
up
Glee.
But the third runner up.
Were we surprised? I had no idea that she was going to be in this episode. Had you heard anything, Jennifer, that she was going to be in it?
I don't hear anything.
I heard her song about four days ago.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so you'd heard the song.
I heard the song, so I knew it was her, but
did you know the setup of it?
No, but I think we speculated before that she was going to be a rival Glee Club person. So it's almost that. I mean, replace Lindsay's name with Charisse, and then all of a sudden you have vocal adrenaline all over again. It's okay.
Yeah, I mean, she's definitely the closest thing to Rachel in whatever school she's actually from. But I do like that. A lot of times with TV shows, when they talk about, you know, when they show kids in high school, it's just kind of like, especially their senior year, it's just sort of like, hey, we're going to do so much this year, and we're great friends, and we're always going to be together, and yada, yada. And it's like, I like that they're actually thinking beyond this year. And, I mean, it's a very scary prospect, and, you know, we all go through it. And, I mean, God, I mean, it took 5 years through college to figure out what I wanted to do, and even then I still wasn't sure.
We're still working on it.
So, but just the fact that they're kind of looking at everybody's, you know, even though they're all from the same town and all are in the same group together, they're all going to have very different futures, mm-hmm. and in very different directions that they want to go. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I think that it would be really interesting. I also like that it will provide us, I mean, depending on what they end up doing with this Nyada group.
Saying that, don't you?
I do. I kept thinking, like, these could be the new Vocal Adrenaline.
Yeah.
And it's nice to have a new bad guy. Yeah. Like, you know, I mean, Vocal Adrenaline is cool, and they're certainly not going anywhere, but it's kind of nice that we can have a new bad guy, since that it's really hard. Like, I think we'll talk about Sue in a second, but it's really hard to buy Sue as a bad guy because she keeps flip-flopping. Like, she's mean and she's nice and she's evil and she's nice. It's really hard for me to really get behind Sue as being evil. And here's something that's like can just be straight up mean and evil and threatening, and we, you know, there's no question about it. I think that'll be pretty neat. Well, we've been talking about the number a lot, so let's go ahead and listen to Anything Goes and Anything You Can Do mashup with Lindsay on lead vocals. Here we go.
The clock, since the Puritans got a shock when they landed on Plymouth Rock. If today any shock they should try to stem, instead of landing on Plymouth Rock would land on them. In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking, but now God knows anything goes. Good authors too, who once knew better words, now only use four letter words, writing prose. Anything goes. Anything you can be, I can be greater. Sooner or later, I'm greater than you.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
It was something you brought up while we were watching this. There's not a song in this show that came out after 1981.
Yeah.
And it's funny to think, like, the most recent song in the episode, I think, was We Got the Beat.
Yeah.
Like, it's a...
That was, like, what, 80?
That was 81. 84? I just looked it up.
Oh. Yikes. Okay.
So it's just kind of wacky. Like, it was an odd way to introduce, because I remember episode one, season two, was like, you know, right off the bat, they brought out Empire State of Mind, which at the time was pretty hot. And they came with, like, Teenage Dream almost immediately after that, which I think wasn't even a single yet. Like, was right away.
Yeah.
And here we start season three with three songs from musicals.
Yes.
And two songs that I'm not sure a lot of young kids know. I mean, I guess everybody knows We Got the Beat. You have to be living pretty deep in Amish country to not get that
one. I'm sure it's like used in a ton of commercials that we just don't remember.
But like, it's not unusual. I mean, that's a... I don't know. I don't know how popular that kind of a track is. It's an interesting musical grouping. Like, Ed, did this jump out at you? I mean, did you even know all five of these songs?
Except for the which one, yeah.
So, oh, the jazz version?
Yeah, except for the which one. The rest I knew. Like, I know Anything Goes. It's one of the few musicals I do know. I mean, it's odd. Tom Jones has been coming up a lot in conversations with me this past week. I don't know what that's about. I had a whole conversation the other day about what's New Pussycat. I was gonna combine the two names somehow. I mean, it was weird, but it was like, I wasn't upset by it. Like, maybe not to say that they shouldn't do modern music, but since it wasn't modern, I didn't feel the extra pressure for it to be reimagined.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. When it's a brand new song, if they just kind of do a standard version of it, it feels a bit cheap. Well, this was the Purple Piano Project, and I think one of my odd kind of complaints about the episode was, did that have anything to do with anything? the purple pianos?
Well, purple, I mean, it was evident throughout. Sue was wearing a purple tracksuit. The pianos were purple. And the last number there, the kids were all in purple.
Oh, you're right.
So purple, October 20th is Spirit Day. And that's, it's to raise awareness against bullying LGBT.
Oh, and you're supposed to wear purple,
on October 20th.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, so I'm surprised they didn't do a little better job kind of addressing that. But I mean, because if they're going heavy on the purple to raise awareness, then if everybody already knows, then they're not helping those, you know, they're not getting any new people is what I'm trying to say. So, October 20th, wear purple.
Like the title of the episode and the plot lines, it was just more of a, like, the purple was just a motif. And everyone getting to where they are now was also a motif for the episode. Hmm. Like they were just, like, they were just things, and you just had to accept them.
Well, but, like, they, you know, that Will comes out and he says, we're going to put purple pianos around campus, and I want you to, like, when you
something,
see one,
something tells
song.
Me that this was originally the Purple Piano Project, when they were originally drafting the script, was a much grander idea, and slowly got diluted down to what we got.
Yeah, I mean, I guess nobody thought to ask, well, why are they purple?
Why not?
No, but I'm saying if they usually question Will on everything. They're not shy about, you know, asking, you know, why. So
true.
But yeah, so that's what I thought.
Someone just pointed out in the chat room that Naylan P19 just pointed out "You Can't Stop the Beat" is a modern song, and I'm totally thinking of the movie and how the whole play, it's from Hairspray, and how it's set in the 50s, but that's not, or it's set in the 60s, but
oh,
that
right,
song
right.
is not actually from the 60s. So you're
that's
absolutely
true.
Right. That is the most recent song in the show was from Hairspray. So
well,
I don't,
there you go.
So nice catch. Yes, everyone has to drink. That was a siren. So we got Sugar in this episode. Sugar, I thought Sugar was fantastic, but I'm curious what other people thought about Sugar. Jennifer?
I could have done without Sugar. I mean, it was fine. It was kind of funny-ish, cute-ish. But because I think they were, you know, addressing so much other stuff, I just felt like having this in there was a little distracting. I mean, I understand it was to challenge Will to step up and say, you know, no, not everybody is equal, and if we want to win, we need to take a stand here. So, I mean, it was good to see that, but I think that could have come out in the second or third episode. I don't think it needed to be crammed into everything else that was happening.
Yeah, she really had nothing to do with anything, and her plot line, as it resolved, didn't really, you know, like, no one learned a lesson from Sugar, you know?
I mean, and the thing that, like, the way she kept throwing out Asperger's like that, after a while I was thinking, okay, actually, you know, we know somebody who actually has Asperger's, and it's just the way she kept using that as an excuse to be a bit of a butthead was, I felt kind of insulting.
It is Glee, though. That is kind
of
what they do.
I know, they're very cheeky that way, and
she was punished for it in the end.
I love Sugar. I mean, it symbolized a growth in priorities for the Glee Club. So in terms of that, I feel like we are upset on some level that there was so much happening in this episode, but nothing important. Like, the best episodes of Glee may not have had, the difference is we know the characters already, so it isn't like we're establishing the characters, but if you look at, but I'm thinking about, like, the season one premiere, and without the overarching storyline of combining, like, creating the Glee Club that already exists, like, we're just getting everyone back together, that's what the overarching storyline, I guess, of this is, getting everyone back together, finding where everyone is, and a lot of, like, what we so enjoyed about that episode, at least for me anyways, was that so many different things were happening, and it was like it was a very fast moving, like, when you reflect back on those episodes, you're like, was that episode one, or was that episode one and two that happened in, or episode one, two, and three, and I feel like in retrospect, we're going to say that about this episode. We're going to be like, oh, wasn't that episode 3 that happened? No, it was episode 1 that had happened of this season. So, like, I don't know. I'm just, well, I'm really defending this episode.
Because I know, but let me just state, like, the other side is that, like, my favorite episodes of any TV show are the ones that, even though they further the plot, even though they're part of the bigger whole and they make everything happen, you could still, like, my dad, who's probably seen, well, I don't know, I don't want him to see no episodes of Glee, because he actually does listen to the show.
My mom, who has seen 1.5 episodes of Glee.
Yeah. Like, so Jennifer's mom, who's seen 1.5 episodes of the show, can she sit down and still enjoy the episode? And I would not say that, like, episode, you know, the pilot, you could, if that's the only episode you ever see of Glee,
well,
that's
what's
still
supposed to be there for, but this isn't the pilot.
But wait. But, like, season 2, episode 1, or sectionals, like, those are episodes that you can watch just that episode, and you still get a complete experience, even though it's better if you watch them all, because they add up to something greater. I don't think you can say that about this episode. I don't think this is an episode that you could just watch this episode and be like, all right, well, that was, you know, that was a good hour of television without having to watch all everything else to really put it in context and understand why it's important. And those, I like the ones that I honestly believe that every episode of every TV show on television, like, you should be able to just watch that episode and still have it be great. You just won't get all the subtlety and, you know, and you
and
won't
the
get the excitement.
Jokes.
So.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's hear from someone else who likes sugar. This is Aaron.
Hi, Justin and Ed. This is Aaron from Connecticut. I just finished watching the first episode of season 3, finally, the Purple Piano Project, and I just had a few things to say. The new character, Sugar, I actually really, really like. I thought she was kind of funny, and I hope we see more of her. Maybe they, I don't know, teach her to sing better. I don't know. I hope you're happy because you finally got to see Rachel and Kirk get rejected by a runner-up on the Glee Project, and, I don't know, I kind of felt bad for them at that time. I don't know, being someone that's gone through that, I felt sympathy for them, even though that number was amazing. It was one of the best mashups they've done on the show by anyone. And I'd just like to say that the episode had a really nice feel to it. I really liked this. I thought it was better than last year's season premiere, and I hope this season continues like this. I love the podcast. Can't wait to hear it. Bye.
The one other thing I have to say about Sugar, and then we'll move on, is the thing that I did like about Sugar is how no one's ever not been able to sing on Glee. Like, if you think about it, pretty much everybody on the show can sing.
Mike Chang.
Yeah, but it's like...
He sang bad.
And I just thought it was hilarious to have, like, that American Idol personality on the show. That's... Even though I agree with you, Jennifer, I don't think it really needed to be there. And it would have been fun to have an entire episode that's just based on this type of a character.
And I would like to see her again, too.
Yeah, totally.
I totally would. It just seemed, again, like, I think what you were saying a little bit about Mercedes' introduction of her new boyfriend, it was just such a throwaway thing, and it's like, well, it deserved a little bit more attention, a little more time, and then we could absorb it, and
yeah,
you know. And I love the quick throwaway stuff too. I think that's hysterical, but there was just, yeah, I think I was just overwhelmed. Not overwhelmed, I don't know. Still trying to put my finger on it. Still like the episode, just not my favorite.
Ed, how about Quinn this week?
I love Quinn, always. I mean, I felt this coming on, this direction for Quinn, or, like, end of last season, so whatever. I mean, she definitely needs to come back and definitely needs to do some light punk rock female song and then rejoin New Directions. She totally has to. If she doesn't rejoin New Directions, then I'll be mad, but she will, so...
I would love to see, I think we need at least, like, I think by the end of the season, we'll have a deeper, learned Quinn, but Quinn will be back to being Quinn. I mean, I think we're definitely going to have Donna redress us by the end of the season.
By next episode, what are you talking about?
Well, okay, probably you're right, especially if Beth shows up, but you're absolutely right. I think before she changes the clothes, we have to get one, like, you know, punk rock song from Quinn. The question is, does she have the voice for it?
I mean, like, she did It's a Man's World, right?
Yeah, but she barely survived that, and it was, and she did it more as a ballad.
She was about to die. It was fine.
The soul gods were unhappy.
Post-production's for Josh.
Yes. Jennifer?
Oh, I totally think, I mean, I think she could do something definitely more edgy. I mean, Deborah Harry doesn't have the greatest range in the world, but
true.
She's, you know, just extremely captivating and you know, you still listen to her music.
My Heart of Glass would be awesome on the show.
Yeah, so I mean, so I think there's a lot of potential. I love her new look. I think it's really cute.
Yeah.
And I know she's not going for cute, but come on, pink hair. She's adorable.
Yeah,
she's
just, totally cute she's is too, the word I'd use.
She's just too pretty to dirty up, you know. So
it's funny how she talks with a whole different voice now, too.
I know, she's deep and raspy. And okay, raise of hands. Who heard Erotic? And who heard Ironic when she was talking about her Ryan Seacrest tattoo? Because, okay, admittedly, I heard Erotic, but my mind said she meant ironic.
So we listened back to it.
Several times.
Several times. Because I swear I heard Erotic. And
I think it was just
thought,
wishful thinking.
No, I honestly thought that an erotic Ryan Seacrest tattoo was so much funnier than an ironic Ryan Seacrest tattoo.
No, ironic is just as funny. What do you mean?
Because
it totally feeds into her faux hipster, faux bohemian, faux punk glam style.
Right, but if she had a real thing for Ryan Seacrest in that way, that's actually pretty funny.
Because saying it's an ironic Ryan Seacrest tattoo is actually stating what it is, but saying it's an erotic Ryan Seacrest tattoo is hilarious because that is not possible. Like, who would have an erotic Ryan? Like, Ryan Seacrest would have an erotic Ryan Seacrest tattoo. That's the extent of the population of the planet.
All right, there's too many visuals going on right now.
But it was pretty funny. She also, when we re-listen to it, she doesn't pronounce it ironic. She pronounces it ironic.
Ironic.
And
because
that's why it was so confusing.
She smokes. She's older now.
Yeah,
she's too cool.
That's how deeper
to enunciate.
People say it.
Okay, so I think somewhere in between both of your predictions as to when she'll go back to being Quinn, I think it'll take a little bit longer, and I don't think she'll ever go back to being, you know, bubblegum, you know, all Miss Perfect cheerleader thing. I think she's definitely gone out to one extreme, but I don't think she'll ever come back to the other.
Yeah.
Well, okay. There was Ryan Murphy alluded to this earlier, and I always assumed that it was going to be Lindsay. That he said that there was going to be a Joan Jett type number on the show, and I assumed that was Lindsay when he was discussing it. Oh. But now that we know who Lindsay is, and now we know the other Glee Project people are, obviously the only person it could be now was Quinn. So it has to be Quinn doing that number.
Okay.
I could definitely see that. I mean, I don't know what Joan Jett song. Joan Jett only has two songs. I mean, pick one. But we already did it on the show.
Oh, that's true.
So she's got I Love Rock and Roll. And
saw you dancing down there by the wrecking machine.
that's like the extent of Joan Jett.
Well, that's fine. That's fine. I mean,
well, she's good. Definitely got the deeper register going right now. At least she's kind of, you know, building that up.
They could do like a cross promotion. She could do like the new Paramore song, Monster.
Ooh.
That would fit her look.
I just can't get into that. I wanted to get into it. I just can't get into
it. Oh, the song?
Yeah, the
no,
Monster.
No, Monster's horrible. That's a horrible song.
I want to get it. Like, I'm like, okay, please let me like you. But it's like, nah, I can't.
They won't let you.
And marginally connected to Quinn, I felt this was a very... Hello, motorcycle. It was a very unceremonious exit for Zices. We invested some love in Zicy. She deserved better.
And the fact is that, like, unlike Sam, who's just gone, and we, you know, like, okay, fine. We knew he was going. We knew, you know, the situation with his family and the fact that, you know, the story comes up that his dad got a job out of state and they moved. That makes sense. But so it's weird that they still, you know, still had her do her exit on the episode when... you know, like everybody else, they just explain after the fact. So,
yeah.
So I don't think she's gone. I just don't think she'll be. I mean, we'll still probably see her like we did before she was part of.
Because they don't want to get rid of her completely, because they need they need someone of Zeissy's, like of what she her level of comedy she can bring to a scene.
Yeah.
But unlike Cord, who they feel is completely disposable, apparently. So.
Well, I mean, yeah, their argument was they offered to have him come back in a limited capacity, and he said no, which whether or not that's actually how it happened.
Yeah, who knows?
Okay, he did say he's working on his new record.
I want to throw out a scenario for you.
Go on.
Quinn plus Samuel.
Quinn plus Samuel?
Well, it would definitely, they definitely would look right together.
Meh, I'm bored already.
You're already bored? Come on.
They have matching nose rings.
I don't like Samuel at all. I just don't. When he comes on the show, hey, I always say, I'm the first one to admit when I'm wrong. If Samuel comes on the show and he's amazing, I will be on the podcast saying I was wrong and they wrote the crap out of Samuel and, you know, and that's probably why it's good and not because he's actually good. But I will be the first one to say, Samuel, prove me wrong. But I don't see it happening.
Well, okay. Maybe with a better direction, more specific direction, you know, not him trying to say who he is, but maybe the show saying, this is who you're going to be and these are your lines and so forth. Maybe he will impress you.
It could happen. It could happen.
Like, the fact is, Ryan Murphy potentially could have wrote for any of the 12 of them. He just chose 4 of them, like through whatever random selection process of elimination that he went through.
Yeah.
He just chose 4 of them, and that's what you're getting.
It is kind of funny to think, like, you know, if I lose a show where the odds are 1 in 12. That's you know, at least the odds weren't in my favor. But if I lose the show where the odds were 1 in 3, like, I'm going to feel pretty crappy about myself.
There were technically 4 winners at the end of this.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and take a listen to Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. This was our Rachel Kurt duet, the Before Wicked, as they put it. Here is Leah Michelle and Chris Cole for doing Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead on the Gleeful Podcast.
Never, ever was. She filled the folks in Munchkin Land with terror and with dread. Till one fine day from Kansas, a house fell on her head. And the coroner pronounced her dead. And through the town, the joyous news went running. The joyous news that the wicked old witch was fine. Well, the wicked witch.
Oh.
Ding dong, the wicked witch is dead.
Oh, yeah, happy day.
Wake up, your sleepy head.
Rub your eyes.
And get out of that bed. Wake up, the wicked witch is dead. She's gone.
This is so Streisand. This is one of her arrangements.
I believe so.
Yeah. So two more things to talk about before we go. Real quick, Wemma. Already problems, already trouble in paradise, but they're cute together. I do like when they pack their lunches and then trade. It's cute.
How are they trouble in paradise? Because, I mean, it seems the only problem they seem to be having was with Sue, not with each other.
Well, I mean, Will was saying, like, you know, I get the green light, but the red light comes right after. And then Will made...
That's not even a problem in my eyes. That's just expected. That's Emma. Like, but if that's the only problem, they're fine. They're fine.
I'm glad you finished that sentence the way you did, because I thought you were going to be like, that's just normal, like, in my life. But you were like, that's just normal.
That may
Emma.
Or may not be true, but in terms of Emma, they're fine. They're sailing. They're John Stamos sailing.
Well, Stamos would be funny to have back. Anyway, it was funny. Jennifer, Wemma this week, how'd you feel?
I thought it was really cute. I thought they were really adorable together. And I hope that, you know, Will doesn't give in to you know, Sue's mind games and actually let, you know, things that they're clearly willing to work on together at a pace and time that's good for each other get to him. So,
yeah,
I do like that. The only thing I do have to say about Will, though, is like, when is he going to learn that every time anytime he tries to be bad, it backfires on him? It's like, come on, the whole glitter bomb thing. Every time he tries to do something mean to Sue, it backfires. Being mean doesn't work for him. He just needs to play by the rules and have faith that things are going to work out. Playing dirty doesn't suit him.
Every time Will just says, like, I'm going to let the universe take care of it, it always does.
Yeah,
it only goes bad.
Yeah, we're going to work hard. We're going to do what we need to do to get things done. But, yeah, anytime he plays to play dirty, it just doesn't work for him.
Now, Irish Mike just mentioned in the chat room, and I didn't catch this, but he says that Sue actually called Emma by her real name in this episode. Did anybody else catch that?
Yeah, this is only the second time ever that's happened.
Crazy.
I totally missed that.
And of course, Will gave us in this episode a glitter bomb, which was better in the preview, I think, than it was in the actual episode. But that was hilarious. And that's one of those things that I'm like, I would like that to catch on in my life. I think that'd be hilarious if glitter bombs caught on YouTube.
I don't think so.
No? That'd be awesome. Sue is back. She's running for Senate, which is crazy.
I thought she was running for district congressional office.
Is that what it is? I thought it was Senate. I could totally be wrong, but she's running for some kind of public office on the No Art in Schools platform.
Because she was trying, before she tried loving something, like being pro something, and that didn't work. So she had to be, she discovered that you get more people when you're against something. And that's true in real life.
Oh, it's such a commentary on the modern political world that she would do that. I don't really know what to say about Sue in this episode, except that she's back and she has plans, and we'll see how those plans go.
No, she doesn't. You act like most of her plans just fall into her lap. Don't be lying to yourself.
Wait, what do you mean?
like historically, she's like, oh, I'll just go. Okay, I feel like I'm not doing justice to my point, but but I really do believe a lot of her plans, they just happen to come up at the last minute, and she just goes through with them, and then like it isn't like she tries big plans, but they rarely succeed.
This is actually coming up in the chat room right now. And this jumped out at me. So I don't know if it jumped out at you, Ed, but I know as like a married person, this totally jumped out at me.
Yeah, but I know. They swap sides, but does that matter?
Will and Emma switch sides of the bed. The first time we saw them in bed together, they were on one side. They were each on one side. And the next time we saw them in bed together, they were on the opposite sides of the bed.
Just doesn't happen.
It never happens.
Never happens.
It's not right.
Not in your own bed. It happens when you travel because you get confused.
Yeah, you're like, I don't know what side I'm on.
I have this
Neanderthal, like I have to be nearest to the door in case there's trouble, like I'd be able to intervene.
But meanwhile, but the baseball bat and the crowbar are on my side of the bed.
Like, what am I going to do? I'm going to be the first one under the bed with the cat. But I still have to be the closest to the door. It's Naylan P19 said that it was District Congress. But yeah, it was just kind of a random thing. I can only think that they did it for the shot. Like the shot looked better and they didn't want to have to move the camera and relight the room or something. It's kind of funny. Eric Stoltz directed this episode.
Maybe it shows that they're like, I don't know, they're a fluid couple that doesn't have specific gender roles.
Well, were they in his bed one time and her bed another time? Or is it definitely his bed both times?
I thought it was the same bed both times. But that would explain it.
Yeah.
And last but not least, before we leave the episode, Santana and Becky as co-captains of the Cheerios, and eventually Santana getting kicked out of New Directions because she couldn't be fully committed to New Directions.
Suspended. That is not a kickdown.
Oh, she was suspended? I didn't catch that. So
she was kicked out, but yeah. I'm interpreting it as suspended.
Oh. Well, I mean, he did stipulate you're out of the group until you can be a part of the group. And that was it. Until you can commit and support 100% your presence in this group and defend the group, then you're out.
Yeah, so I took it as kicked out until she shapes up.
You know she'll be back.
But she'll totally be back. I'm curious how she's going to get there. You know, Ed, do you think we're going to see, you know, Santana, the unholy trinity is going to become the unholy one? Like, how did you feel about Santana being asked to leave?
I feel like that's just setting up a storyline with Quinn going back to the light side and bringing Santana with her.
So Quinn has to, like, Quinn actually has to be the salvation?
Sure. Definitely, without question. Sure.
we'll buy it. Well, that's about it. Jennifer, did I forget something?
Well, I just had another comment about
Sue. Oh, I'm sorry.
Sue, but that's okay. I could just skip over that. I think Santana is now going to be even more evil as a Cheerio and even more willing to become, you know, Sue's henchman, regardless, you know, of what it's going to cost her former friends.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely seems to be where it's going to go next. But I wonder, like, in the past, Santana was never evil. She was just didn't give a crap. And I think that's what was so entertaining about her is that Sue wanted to, you know, Sue wanted to burn everything to the ground. Santana was okay if it did. She didn't seem to really care either way.
She just wanted to be the popular one. She wanted to be
a bitch along the way. Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. Ed, do you have an opinion on that?
I guess not. I'm fine with Santana how she is. What is your question? I'm confused.
Oh, I'm curious, like, if Santana does, you know, have to become the evil force, which it does look like she's going to become.
I mean, she's done it, in the past. She's been, like, in episodes without Sue, Santana was the evil one. So don't underestimate the things that she will do.
I'll take that. I'll absolutely take that. Well, that's about it, guys. Do we have anything else for the episode?
I have a question. What happened to Dave Karofsky?
He was not even there.
That beast just magically reappeared too, so it's whatever.
Cool. You know, it's back. Well, I mean, okay, so for her, beast just like good. A lot of things, you know, like, okay, we don't need a lot of exposition on it. Like, we understand the way things work. Okay, it's September, kids are back in school, football's back. So Beast is around. I get that. But did I forget what happened to him? Because last I knew he was singing on Glee.
Well, last time we saw Karofsky, wasn't it at prom?
It was
when he ran out of prom.
Did he just leave and never come back?
He's still running. He's
run,
halfway
Forrest,
to
run.
It's just not, like, right, it's just not important right now. It may or may not be important later. Layer. Do I speak English sometimes?
Layer cake.
There's just so much you can do with Karofsky. Yeah. Like, I think to not have him around would lose something, but I agree with you, Ed. I'm happy to let Kurt and Blaine and let that plot line take a back seat for a little while. If that means that we sacrifice Karofsky in the process, you know, I'm sure Adler can get other work.
Well, I mean, he was, you know, working as the guard. Oh, that was when, that was before prom, when he was working as a guardian angel, walking Kurt.
Yes.
Protecting Kurt. Okay. All right. I'll just have to do a little catching up.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if he does come back.
Yeah.
Well, that's about all we have for the Purple Piano Project. Ed, would you like to thank any iTunes reviewers?
Yes, I would. I would like to thank Happy Appy Fool. Thank you for reviewing us.
Yeah. Yes, definitely review us. You can also find us on the website, gleefulpodcast.com, on Twitter, twitter.com/gleefulpodcast. Also, I'm at Josh Brunell. She's at Jenny B. Creative, and he's at Edward Giordano. You can find us on Facebook. Just search for Gleeful. And, you know, go to the website, buy a t-shirt. We still have t-shirts. And that's a fun way to support the show. Subscribe, tell your friends, all that good stuff. About it for us. We're going to leave you with You Can't Stop the Beat, which was from Hairspray. Jennifer, how did we feel about You Can't Stop the Beat?
I thought it was fun. I mean, I love this musical. It's just total fun from start to finish. And And it was a fun way to end the show with all of them together.
Totally. Ed, on the spectrum of group numbers, how did we feel about You Can't Stop the Beat?
I mean, it wasn't, like, epic, but it was, before I complained that it was getting predictable with the group numbers, and then I complained that we didn't have a group number, so I'm thankful now. I went from mad to just thankful. I'm thankful for the group numbers.
And, actually, I just thought of a question for you, Ed, and Jennifer. What did we think of Blaine not in a Warblers uniform?
Adorable. Oh, so cute.
Ed?
I think he should lose the bow tie. to be honest, I mean, no one said he had to be like that all the time.
Yeah, but I think he's is equally fashion forward and aggressive as Kurt. So
that may or may not be true, but I'm just saying that he could have lost the bow tie for at least that look. It didn't add anything to it. It just distracted me.
Well, I thought it was a cute back to school outfit.
I couldn't wear it, nor should I. But it looked pretty fun on him. For the Gleeful Podcast with Josh and I'm Josh.
I'm Jen.
Later, Gleeaches.
Good night. When Blaine joined New Directions and Mr. Schuster said, well, we'd like to welcome our new member, Blaine Anderson. And I swear to God, for a moment, my brain went, isn't his last name Warbler? Seconds of Big Brother with Ed Giordano.
It's over. Rachel deserved to win, and she did win.
Oh.
Thank you, world. I had to make a website for web production class, and it could be about whatever I wanted, so I made it about Rachel. So if you went to my Twitter, you could check out the website I made for her, because I do those types of things, apparently.